And rat. Chapter 9. In the Jaws of the Rat. Leela stood waiting silently for a moment, the sound of the gong ringing in her ears. As it faded, she heard an angry squealing. She hurried along the sewer tunnel, away from the terrifying sound. Lantern held high, the doctor splashed through the murky stream that flowed down the center of the sewer. He came to a T-junction and paused to review his mental picture of the map he had drawn on Lightfoot's tablecloth. Taking the left turn, he splashed steadily on his way. If his calculations were correct, the cellar hideout was very near. Sitting in the rowing boat just outside the sewer outlet, Professor Lightfoot looked at his watch for the 10th time. The tide would be rising soon. The doctor's time was almost up. Lightfoot sighed and put another match to his pipe. He tossed the spent match into the river and watched it float away. Hunched over his oars, the boatman spat impassively into the water. Meanwhile, a brightly painted horse-drawn cart was drawing up outside Professor Lightfoot's door. A policeman stepped suspiciously out of the shrubbery. "Here, what's all this?" The pigtailed Chinese driver appeared to speak no English. He chatted incomprehensibly and pointed to the side of the cart on which was written Limehouse Laundry Company. He pointed to the porch where there stood a wicker hamper, the same words written on the label on its side. He opened the back of his cart and pointed to an identical hamper, making crossover gestures with his hands. The constable grinned. "I get you, Johnny. Clean laundry come, dirty washing go away." The Chinese bowed and smiled. He took the basket from his van and put it on the porch, lifted the basket on the porch into the back of his van. Jumping into the driving seat, he cracked his whip and drove away. Wondering vaguely why the Chinese had such an affinity with laundries, the constable resumed his patrol around the house. As he moved away, the lid of the wicker basket moved slightly and then became still. Now there was a tiny gap between basket and lid, just big enough for someone to look out. Arriving at the theatre to start his day's work, Casey was scandalized to see a half-dressed female run out of Chang's dressing room. "Hey, you!" he called. "What do you think you're doing?" The girl stared blankly at him. "Where am I? What happened to me last night? I can't remember." Casey grabbed her by the arm. "I'll remember you, all right, if anything's missing." Indignantly, Teresa pulled away.
"You keep your hands off me! I'm a lady!" she screamed.
Jago came on the scene to find a final shouting match going on. "Now then, Casey, what's the trouble?"
"No trouble, Mr. Jago, sir. Just seeing this lady off the premises."
Jago turned sternly to Teresa, but she ignored him. She was staring in terror at a poster on the wall. The poster that bore Chang's face.
"It was him!"
she gasped.
"Oh, my Lord, it was him! Let me out of this place!"
She turned and ran out of the still-open stage door. Jago said thoughtfully, "Remember this incident, Casey. It may have some relevance to the investigation."
"What's that, sir?"
"The investigation, Casey," whispered Jago mysteriously. "Last night I made the acquaintance of a very high-up gentleman, an amateur investigator called in by Scotland Yard." Jago's chest swelled with pride. "I am assisting him, Casey." Casey's eyes widened. "No, I am. He has asked me to watch, Casey, and I am watching everywhere." Jago disappeared into his office. Casey shrugged wonderingly and disappeared backstage. After a moment, Chang stepped from the doorway where he'd been watching and hurried towards the cellar steps. The moment he entered Greel's chamber, a storm of rage broke over his head. "Fool!" screamed Greel. "Stupid, incompetent fool!" Angrily, he told of Leela's attack on him and of her escape into the sewers. "She was a tigress! Had I not feigned death, she would have killed me!" "I can explain, Lord," pleaded Chang. "She substituted herself for the girl I had chosen. And I recognize your description of her. She was with the doctor." Greel hobbled to a metal chair close to his extraction machine and fastened electrodes to his wasted body. He operated controls, and the retort glowed brightly and then faded again. There was a rushing sound as the life essence of the sacrificed girl flooded into Greel's body. Greel waited for a moment, then stood up. As he removed the electrodes, he could feel the strength returning to his body. But he knew all too well that the effect was only temporary. Soon he would weaken again, and it would need more donors, and yet more, to keep him from wasting away. The knowledge added to his anger, and he turned once more on the unhappy Chang. "You have failed me, Lee Sen! You know that until I have the time cabinet, I can never be whole, never be cured of this wasting sickness." "Lord, hear me," pleaded Chang. "I would lay down my life in your service. You shall have the time cabinet tonight. The plans are already made."
"Fail me once more and I shall dismiss you, Chang. I cannot leave my fate in such blundering hands."
Chang fell to his knees.
"Great one. I shall find this doctor. I shall strike him down for the harm he has done you."
Greel waved him away.
"Do not beg, unworthy one. Go!"
Leela ran frantically through the sewers. From somewhere behind her came the savage squealing of the giant rats. Summoned by the gong, they had come rushing to Greel's feeding hatch. Leela had managed to dodge them, hiding in an alcove, as the great grey shapes came rushing by. Finding no meat at the grating, the monsters had begun casting about the tunnels. Leela ran blindly on. Since she had no idea where she was or where she was heading, she was as likely to run into one of the creatures as to escape from them. Her only hope was to keep on the move. Suddenly, she heard a fierce, trumpeting squeal close behind her. One of the monsters had picked up her scent. Not far away, the doctor heard the squeal. He paused to check his fowling piece, then moved towards the sound.
Leela sped on through the darkness. She could hear scurrying footsteps behind her and the angry screams of the giant rat. She tripped and fell and struggled desperately to her feet again. Wet and filthy now, she staggered on. A tiny point of light appeared in the tunnel far ahead. With the last of her failing strength, she reeled towards it. The doctor heard the terrifying roar of the giant rat. Calmly, he placed his lantern on a ledge and raised the gun to his shoulder. A shape loomed up. The doctor sighted along the barrel of the gun and realized that the shape was Leela. Hastily lowering the gun, he called, "Leela, it's me!" Leela paused for a moment, gasping with relief. And the giant rat sprang out of the darkness and seized her leg. She gave a despairing scream as the rat began dragging her back along the tunnel.
Chapter 10. A Plan to Kill the Doctor. For an agonized moment, the doctor hesitated. To shoot with the rat and Leela so close together meant taking a terrible risk. But there was no alternative. He dropped to one knee, threw the gun to his shoulder, aimed, and fired. There was a great boom of an explosion, and the recoil of the heavy weapon made him stagger back. Clouds of black smoke poured from the barrel of the gun, and peering through the haze, the doctor saw Leela crawling towards him. Behind her, the giant rat lay on its side, a gaping hole in its chest, lips drawn back from the yellow fangs in a dying snarl. The doctor helped Leela to rise,
Are you all right?
Leela rubbed her leg.
I think so. The teeth just bruised me. Some use in these stupid clothes, after all.
You were lucky.
I deserve to die, Doctor. I had the chance to kill our enemy, and I failed.
The Doctor took off his cape and wrapped it round Leela's shoulders.
What chance? Where?
A distant roar came echoing down the tunnel. The Doctor picked up his gun.
The trouble with this thing is it takes about half an hour to load. Come on, Leela. You can tell me what you've been up to on the way back.
With preparations for the evening meal well underway, Jago decided to slip out to the pub across the street for a little liquid refreshment. He was just leaving the theatre by the stage door when he met Lee Sen Chang, who was just arriving.
"Here already, Mr. Chang," said Jago jovially. "Ha! I shall have to start charging you rent for that dressing room."
Chang smiled coldly.
"There is much to prepare before the performance, Mr. Jago."
"Yes, of course, of course. The art that conceals art, eh? Tell me, Mr. Chang,
Jago paused awkwardly.
"About last night?"
"Yes."
"Think I must be working too hard, overcrowding the old brain box. I know I spoke to you about your contract. I've forgotten how we left matters."
"I am considering your new offer."
"Ah, I see, I see. A generous offer, was it, Mr. Chang?"
"Merely reasonable."
Chang turned to go to his dressing room, then paused.
"Incidentally, I shall be appearing tonight without Mr. Sin. He is indisposed."
Jago chuckled.
"Very droll. I shall treasure that witticism, Mr. Chang. Indisposed. I suppose the poor little fella's got a touch of woodworm, eh?"
Ignoring Jago's little joke, Chang turned and headed for the dressing room. Jago mopped his brow and plunged through the stage door. Somehow, after his meeting with Chang, he needed a drink more than ever. The Doctor was sitting wrong way round on one of Lightfoot's dining room chairs, folded arms resting on the high back, chin resting on his arms. He was staring fixedly at the time cabinet, as if hoping to fathom its secrets by sheer willpower. Leela was warming her hands at the blazing fire, still swathed in the Doctor's cape. She was telling him about the girl who had been sacrificed in Greedle's machine. "She aged and withered, Doctor. Her skin went dry like old leaves. The machine did it to her. Then she vanished."
"Dry, like old leaves," repeated the Doctor thoughtfully. "It sounds like organic distillation. Her life essence was drained away.
Why? What is our enemy doing?"
The Doctor jumped up. "He doesn't know what he's doing," he shouted in sudden anger. "He's a madman! A monstrously deranged sociopath!"
The door opened and Lightfoot staggered in. He was loaded down with parcels, which he passed over to Leela with a sigh of relief.
"There's your new outfit, my dear. I hope it's suitable. If you'd like to take these things upstairs, Mrs. Hudson will help you change."
Leela went out with the parcels, and Lightfoot sank into a chair, mopping his brow.
"Dashed embarrassing business, that, choosing togs for a young lady. You have to be jolly careful it's the right fashion. Clothes matter to women."
"They do," said the Doctor abstractedly.
He resumed his study of the time cabinet, running his hands over the surface. There was a saucer-shaped depression in the middle of what was, presumably, the door.
"A keyhole," muttered the Doctor. "But where's the key?"
"Still trying to get that thing open, Doctor."
"I'm trying to place the exact period. It can only be opened by a key of the correct molecular combination. Heard you shouting as I opened the front door, something about a madman."
"Yes, Weng Chiang. He's probably got the key."
"Weng Chiang? He was one of the ancient Chinese gods."
"This Weng Chiang's no god.
He must have arrived in your time zone in this contraption.
The doctor tapped the cabinet.
What do you know of its history?
It was a gift to Mama from His Highness Tung Chi. Been in the family for years.
Well, you're lucky he hasn't traced it before now, said the doctor broodingly.
Leela came back resplendent in a new gown.
Charming, said Lightfoot immediately.
Don't you think so, Doctor?
The doctor focused his attention on Leela.
What?
Oh, yes, quite delightful. I shall be proud to escort you to the Palace Theatre tonight.
Leela was pleased in spite of herself. The clothes of this century were ridiculous and impractical, but they were rather becoming in their way.
Then we're going to the theatre after all, Doctor.
That's right. We've an appointment with the great Li Shen Chang.
The doctor beamed, cheered up as always by the prospect of action.
Tell you what, Leela, if you're a very good girl, I might even buy you an orange.
Jago stood backstage, watching the bustle of activity all around him. The first house had gone off well, and now it was almost time for the second to begin. As always, once the performance got underway, the evening seemed to flash by at an incredible pace. He went onto the stage itself and peered through the gap in the curtains. The house was filling up nicely, though disappointingly, there was still no sign of the one person he'd most hoped to see.
"Looking for someone, Mr. Jago?" said a familiar voice behind him.
Jago turned.
"The doctor, Casey. My collaborator and fellow sleuth. No sign of him yet."
"Oh, well, he'll be here, Casey. I'll lay a guinea to a gooseberry on it."
Behind them in the center of the stage, Chang was checking the operation of a trap door that was used in his act. He straightened up at Jago's words and went to his dressing room. He took a shining nickel-plated revolver from a drawer and began to load it. If the doctor did come tonight, Chang would be waiting. There was the sound of horses' hooves in the road outside, and Lightfoot went to the window.
"There you are, Doctor. Your cab's arrived."
The doctor was putting on his cape, and Lightfoot turned to help Leela with her cloak.
"You'll need to wrap up. Fog's getting thick again."
The doctor paused at the door.
"I know there's a policeman outside, Professor, but don't just rely on him. Lock and bar your doors as soon as we've gone, and keep your revolver handy."
Lightfoot saw them into the hall.
"You really think these scoundrels may return?
That cabinet is vitally important to their master. They'll stop at nothing to get their hands on it. So be on your guard, Professor."
"Don't worry, Doctor, I'll be ready for them. They won't catch George Lightfoot napping a second time."
Lightfoot opened the front door and watched Leela and the doctor get into the waiting cab. The driver cracked his whip, the cab rattled away, and the patrolling policeman touched his helmet in salute as it disappeared into the fog. Lightfoot noticed the laundry basket on the porch and thought vaguely that the laundry had delivered a day early. He dragged the hamper through the front door and left it in the hall. Mrs. Hudson would see to it in the morning. Returning to the sitting room, Lightfoot put some more coal on the fire and poured himself a large whiskey and soda. Glass in one hand, revolver in the other, he settled down for his night's vigil. Greel was busy dismantling his distillation machine. He paid no attention to Chang, who stood bowing low before him. Unable to believe that his god would really desert him, Chang said,
"Lord, if this infidel doctor does come here tonight, then I swear I shall kill him."
Greel gave a mirthless laugh.
"It is far more likely that he will kill you." "No, Lord, I have made a plan to kill the doctor in public, as a sacrifice to appease your wrath, to prove that I, above all others, am your true servant."
Greel waved him away.
"You're unworthy to serve me, Li Shen Chang. I shall lead the Tong myself, and take my own measures to recover the time cabinet. Now go!"
Chang bowed low and turned to the ladder, more determined than ever to carry out his plan. Surely his god would forgive him.
once the doctor was dead. The second heist was just about to start, and Jago was still scanning the audience.
There he is, Casey, look!
Jago pointed upwards. Leela and the doctor were just entering the royal box, the one just beside the stage.
Trust him to take the best seats in the house, said Jago admiringly.
Casey stared at the doctor's tall figure.
Doesn't look much like a detective to me. Well, he's not going to wear a bowler hat and big boots, is he? High up secret investigator he is, a man of a thousand faces.
Who's the girl?
Window dressing, part of his disguise.
Jago turned away from the curtain.
Think I'll just pop along and let him know we're standing by down here?
Jago's mind returned abruptly to the business of everyday life.
Now then, Casey, have you got that trap door ready?
Not yet, Mr. Jago, sir.
Then you'd better see to it, my lad, unless you want Mr. Chang after you for ruining his act.
Jago hurried away.
Casey called after him.
The thing is, Mr. Jago, it means going down into that cellar.
But Jago was gone. Casey sighed and moved slowly towards the cellar steps. The doctor and Leela were installed in their comfortable box. Leela gazed round the fast-filling theatre with keen interest. Although she didn't really know what was going on, her keen senses were already picking up vibrations of pleasure and excitement in the air. It reminded her of the tribal festivals of her own people. The doctor was glancing through the program when he heard a low psh from somewhere near the floor. He looked down and saw Jago crawling into the box on his hands and knees. The doctor smiled.
Good evening, Mr. Jago.
A pleasure to welcome you to my theatre, Doctor, and your charming companion.
Thank you. Are you quite comfortable down there?
I know the value of discretion, Doctor. May I ask if you've made any further deductions?
Quite a few, Mr. Jago, quite a few.
I thought as much. No doubt you're on the point of solving the mystery of the missing maidens.
I expect further developments shortly, said the doctor mysteriously. Jago was thrilled with the romance and excitement of it all.
Well, if you need any help, I hope I know where my duty lies.
The doctor reached down and patted him on the shoulder.
You're a brave man, Mr. Jago. I knew I could count on you.
Still, I don't suppose you'll actually be needing me, added Jago hastily. I expect you've got the place surrounded, eh?
Armed men, scattered in the audience.
The doctor shook his head. Jago paled.
You mean there's nobody?
Nobody, said the doctor solemnly. When the moment of danger comes, Mr. Jago, you and I will face our destiny shoulder to shoulder.
Oh, Corks, said Jago faintly, and backed slowly out of the box.
In fear and trembling and working as fast as he could, Casey finished preparing the mechanism of the trapdoor that formed part of Chang's act. His task completed, he was hurrying from the gloomy cellar when he heard a grinding sound from the corner arch. Terrified, Casey spun round. A black-cloaked figure was climbing up through the trapdoor in the floor. It wore a loose-brimmed black hat. Its face was entirely covered in black leather mask, and incongruously, it was carrying a carpet bag. Casey made a terrified dart for the cellar stairs, but the apparition saw him. Dropping the bag, it bounded after him with a terrifying snarl. Casey's foot slipped on the bottom stair. He fell, and the apparition was upon him. As its skinny hands reached out, Casey heard faint sounds of music from the stage above. Then everything was drowned out by the frightened pounding of his heart. Chapter 11. Death on Stage. The soprano concluded her patriotic song and exited to enthusiastic applause. The curtains were drawn and Jago appeared in front of them.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is my privilege to introduce to you, in his extended season here at the palace, in the second of two appearances here this evening, someone whose legendary legerdemain has entertained all the crowned heads of Europe. Here, to baffle and bewilder you, the world's foremost magician, straight from the mysterious Orient, ladies and gentlemen, Li Shen Chang!
The curtains drew back to reveal a painted backdrop intended to represent an oriental palace. Jago pointed dramatically to the center of the empty stage and stepped hastily back. There was a brilliant flash, a cloud of smoke, and suddenly Chang was there, bowing low in his oriental robes.
Humble Chang, he's most honored at this kind reception.
He snapped his fingers, and the Chinese assistant Li carried on a table upon which rested a pack of cards and a nickel-plated revolver.
First trick, very simple, announced Chang.
During his act, he often spoke in the pidgin English that Englishmen expected from the Chinese. He picked up the cards from the table.
Will someone take cards, please?
Chang walked across to the side of the stage until he stood directly looking up at the doctor's box.
You, sir, please catch ye cards.
He tossed the pack into the air, and the doctor caught it. Chang bowed.
Kindly assist humble magician by finding ace of diamonds and holding up so everyone can see.
The doctor found the card and held it up to the audience. Chang bowed his thanks.
Ah, so. Now please to put card back in middle of pack and hold whole pack up with finger and thumb.
Once more the doctor obeyed. Chang took the revolver from the table.
Chang will now shoot magic bullet through ace of diamonds without hitting other cards. Honorable gentlemen will please remain very still.
Chang leveled the revolver from the stage. The doctor stood upright in the box, the cards held before his chest like a target. Leela looked worriedly up at him.
Doctor, be careful.
The doctor smiled. He knew that Chang intended to try to kill him, but he also knew that the magician wouldn't do it too obviously. This was merely a preliminary challenge, a test of nerve. Deliberately, the doctor moved the pack of cards so it was directly over his left-hand heart. There was an excited murmur from the crowd, and Chang held up a reproving hand.
Please, to be very still! I shot 15 peasants trying to learn this trick!
Slowly, Chang raised the revolver and fired. The doctor stood quite still, and Chang called,
"If most courageous gentlemen will now look for ace of diamonds."
The doctor found the card and held it up. There was a neat hole drilled through the center. The crowd gave a round of applause, and the doctor looked down at Chang.
"Oh, very good. Anything else I can do?"
Chang bowed once more.
"If honorable gentlemen will please bring cards down to stage, I have further interesting demonstration requiring assistant with nerves of steel."
The doctor gave Leela a reassuring smile and left the box. Meanwhile, Li, Chang's assistant, was wheeling a metal cabinet on stage. Chang flung open the doors and rapped on the sides, demonstrating its solid construction. The doctor appeared at the side of the stage, and Chang beckoned him forward.
"Now I will ask eager volunteer to step into Cabinet of Death."
Chang smiled as the doctor moved slowly towards the cabinet. He was banking on the fact that, as with the card trick, the doctor would be too proud to refuse a public challenge. Once inside the cabinet, the doctor would be doomed. It was a simple enough trick. The victim, usually a chorus girl, stepped inside the cabinet, which was then closed and locked. Once inside, she pressed a hidden catch, and the trick floor of the cabinet slid back. The cabinet was positioned directly over a trapdoor in the stage, and at a signal from Chang, Casey would operate the trapdoor
so that the girl could drop out of the cabinet and under the stage. Chang would then pass swords through the special slits in the side of the empty cabinet. A few minutes later, he would withdraw the swords and give another signal. The girl would come up through the trap door. There would be a bang and a flash. Chang would open the door, and she would step from the cabinet unharmed. That was the way things usually went. This time Chang planned a very different ending. Once the doctor was inside the cabinet, Chang would thrust the razor-sharp swords through the slits, with the doctor still inside. The doctor wouldn't know how to find the secret catch. And even if he did, Chang had no intention of giving Casey the signal to open the trap door. The doctor would be executed publicly, in full sight of his friends, and no one would be more horrified than Chang at the tragic accident, caused, of course, by an unfortunate jamming of the equipment. The doctor was at the cabinet by now, and at a nod from Chang, Li attempted to thrust him inside. The doctor dodged. Li stumbled, and suddenly found that he was inside the cabinet. Instantly, the doctor closed and locked the doors, and turning to the crowd, he gave an exaggerated bow. A burst of laughter came from the crowd. Chang glowered, but soon regained control of himself.
The bird has flown! Alas, it seems that one of us is yellow!
The crowd greeted Chang's sally with another burst of laughter, and no one laughed louder than the doctor. Chang realized that the doctor had outwitted him. All he could do now was go on with the trick. Chang stretched out his hand, and a long, sharp sword seemed to appear from thin air.
Pay close attention, ladies and gentlemen!
He swished the sword in the air and thudded it right down into the stage to demonstrate its sharpness. The thud was in reality a signal to Casey down below. It should have been followed by the faint rumble that meant the trap was open. Chang listened, but heard nothing. Anxiously, he drew out the sword and thudded it into the boards once more. Below the stage, Greel heard the repeated signal. He had formed a grim plan of his own. He would seal his rejection of Chang by punishing him with a public loss of face, the most humiliating fate that any Chinese can suffer. He reached out and pulled the lever, and Li tumbled through the trapdoor. At the sight of Greel, he prostrated himself on the ground in terror.
"You will serve me now!" croaked Greel. "Now listen to my instructions. The secret things in the secret chamber must be taken to the House of the Dragon and the Time Cabinet recovered. Summon your brothers of the Tong to help you. Meanwhile, I shall deal with our great magician."
Chang heard the faint vibration of the trap, and saw that the cabinet was empty, he continued with his act. Keeping up a steady stream of comic patter, he began passing sword after sword through the slits in the cabinet.
"In my country," he hissed, "this is known as the Death of the Thousand Cuts."
When the last sword was in place, Chang bowed and spun the cabinet round on its base to reveal that the swords had passed completely through. He replaced the cabinet and began removing the swords. As he took the last one out, he gestured to the doctor.
"Now, if my new assistant will kindly open the cabinet."
The doctor threw open the cabinet door, and Casey fell out onto the stage. There was laughter from the crowd, which turned to uneasy murmuring as the huddled body did not move. A woman screamed. In the wings, Jago grabbed his chief stagehand.
"Get that curtain down, quick!"
As the curtains began to close, Jago ran out in front of them and made a brief, incoherent announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, unfortunate accident. No cause for alarm. Performance will continue shortly."
He waved frantically at the conductor, and the orchestra struck up a rousing tune. Jago hurried backstage to find the doctor kneeling by Casey's body.
"For heaven's sake, what happened, doctor?"
"He's dead. Died of fright. Poor chap must have had a weak heart." Leela ran onto the stage.
"What happened, doctor? Did the magician kill him?"
The doctor shook his head. No. Chang was as surprised as anyone. He looked round. Incidentally, where's he got to? Despairing, Chang looked round Greel's now empty secret chamber. The equipment, the distillation chamber, everything was gone.
Oh, great lord, the Wang Chiang has deserted me, sobbed Chang, and fell to his knees.
He was still kneeling, head bowed, when the doctor and Leela came down the ladder. He looked up at them apathetically.
It seems you've been left to carry the can, Chang, said the doctor.
Chang raised a hand to his mouth, and the doctor pounced, tugging the dragon seal ring from his finger.
No poison for you. There are questions to be answered.
Chang got to his feet, struggling to recover his dignity.
I will say nothing. It is time for me to rejoin my ancestors.
Tell me about Wang Chiang, insisted the doctor. Where's he gone now?
Chang looked vaguely at him.
Back to his palace in the sky, perhaps. He was displeased with me.
His mind is broken, whispered Leela. The doctor stared hypnotically into Chang's dazed eyes, willing him to answer.
You know he's not really a god, don't you? When did you meet?
Chang's voice became a chant.
He came like a god in a glowing cabinet of fire. He came forth and collapsed, weakened by his journey. I was only a humble peasant, but I gave him sanctuary in my hut.
What about the time cabinet?
The soldiers of the Emperor came upon it by chance. They took it away while my lord was still sick. When he began to recover, we searched for it. We learned that it had been given as a gift to a foreign devil woman who had left the shores of China. Ever since we have searched for the great cabinet of Wang Chiang, the god is still sick. He will not be whole until it is found.
Jago clattered down the ladder and looked round the chamber in astonishment.
Ha! Cover me in creosote. I never knew this was here. A cellar? Under the cellar?
Doctor, look out! Called Leela, but it was too late. Taking advantage of the distraction, Chang ducked into the culvert through which Leela had once made her escape and disappeared into the sewers. Leela started to follow him, but the doctor restrained her.
No, Leela.
But he'll escape.
There's no escape that way. He's gone to join his ancestors.
From somewhere in the sewers came the scream of a giant rat. Chang was running frantically through the sewers when he heard the scream. It was somewhere in front of him, very close. He turned and began running towards the hidden chamber, but it was too late. A giant rat sprang out of the darkness and bore him down. Its teeth closed on his leg, and it began dragging him back towards its lair. Jago stared around him in fascination.
So, the Celestial Chang really was involved in these Machiavellian machinations?
Up to his epicanthic eyelids, said the doctor solemnly.
Well, I'll go to Australia, said Jago.
A scream from the sewer cut him short.
What in the name of heaven?
The doctor turned away.
You'll need a new top of the bill, I'm afraid.
Chang, whispered Jago.
The doctor nodded. There are giant rats roaming these sewers, Mr. Jago. You'd better warn the authorities to seal off this whole section. Cyanide gas will probably settle the brutes. Searching for clues, Leela flung open a corner cabinet.
Look, Doctor! Women's clothes, lots of them.
All that's left of the victims, said the doctor grimly. Jago stared at him.
The missing girls. So it was Chang.
Not Chang. His master. The monstrous, crazed maniac who caused all this. Leela pointed to the empty corner.
The death machine has gone, Doctor.
Precisely. He plans to start all over again somewhere else.
I've got to find him.
But he could be anywhere.
Leela looked at the pathetic bundle of clothes. Why did he destroy those girls?
He needed their life essence to survive, said the doctor impatiently. Unfortunately, the more he absorbs, the more grossly deformed he becomes.
Leela tried to translate all this into terms she could understand. You mean he is like a water bag with a hole in it. Pouring in more water only makes the hole grow bigger.
The doctor looked at her in mild surprise.
That's exactly right. A very good analogy, Leela.
What made him like that?
An experiment that went wrong, said the doctor slowly. A dangerous experiment in time travel. He's upset the balance of his metabolism. Now he's fighting to restore it by drawing on the life force of others. Come on, Leela. We'd better get back to that time cabinet. He climbed the ladder and Leela followed him. Left on his own, Jago was struck by sudden inspiration.
Got it, he said. I'll run tours of inspection. See the lair of the Phantom, above a knob.
Lightfoot's head nodded onto his chest, and he awoke with a sudden start. The coal fire in the grate had burned low. He must have been asleep for quite some time. He got stiffly to his feet, went over to the window and drew back the curtain. In the circle of light cast by the lamp over the porch, he saw the patrolling policeman stamping his feet to keep warm. Lightfoot felt a pang of sympathy for the poor fellow out in the cold and fog. Reassured, he put some more coal on the fire and poked it into a blaze, then sank back into his comfortable chair. Outside, the policeman yawned and stretched, and decided to take a turn around the house. Daft idea, anyway, all this, he thought. What did old Professor Lightfoot need guarding for? Bored and sleepy, the policeman didn't notice the lithe, black-clad figures slipping through the shrubbery and moving ever closer to the house. As he turned to begin his patrol, a hatchet spun out of the darkness and thudded into the back of his neck. He dropped without a sound, and the servants of the Tong began converging on the house. In the hall, the lid of the laundry basket suddenly flew off. Mr. Sin sat upright, eyes wide open, knife in hand. Chapter 12. The Hunt for Greel. The doctor paid off the cab driver, who raised his whip in salute and drove away. Leela made straight for Lightfoot's front door, but the doctor put a hand on her arm. Wait.
What's the matter?
The doctor pointed. Over there. A booted foot was projecting from a clump of shrubbery. They went over and found the body of the constable, thrust carelessly out of sight. Leela whirled to face the house.
Our enemies are here.
I doubt it. They've probably been and gone. They went to the front door and found it slightly ajar. The doctor pointed to the array of locks and bolts on the inside. No sign of forced entry. Someone let them in. They found Lightfoot sprawled on the floor of the sitting room, blood trickling from an ugly bruise on his forehead. Leela pointed.
The time cabinet, Doctor! It's gone!
The pigtail driver cracked his whip, and the black carriage rattled over the cobbles. The time cabinet was strapped on the roof. Inside the carriage sat Greel, Mr. Sin lolling beside him. Greel's wasted body was shaking with maniacal laughter. Lightfoot could tell them little when he revived. He'd been dozing in his chair. The door had been flung open, and a horde of black-clad figures had overwhelmed him.
Chinese tongwallers, said Lightfoot indignantly. Funny thing is, I didn't hear 'em breaking in.
The doctor was standing in the doorway looking at the laundry basket in the hall. Was one of them a midget by any chance?
That's right, how the devil did you know?
Elementary, my dear Lightfoot. He arrived in your laundry basket and let the others in. Leela went on bathing Lightfoot's forehead.
That creature was here before, Doctor. I fought with it in this room.
That's right.
The Doctor sank wearily into an armchair. I've worked out what all this is about now. Everything fits. Chang's Mr. Sin is really the Peking homunculus. It was made in Peking and presented as a gift to the Commissioner of the Icelandic Alliance, somewhere around the year 5000. Preposterous, snorted Lightfoot. Leela waved him to silence. It wasn't often the Doctor was in the mood to explain anything.
Shh! Go on, Doctor.
The Doctor told a horrifying story of war and carnage in the far distant future. Much of it Leela and the Professor found hard to follow. Somehow it was all tied up with the sinister little mannequin. It was supposed to be a toy, a plaything for the Commissioner's children. It was operated by a series of magnetic circuits and a small computer, with one organic component, the cerebral cortex of a pig. The Doctor paused, remembering the future. In reality, it was an assassination weapon. It massacred the Commissioner and all his family. That's what set off World War VI. Somehow the thing has been brought from that age to this. Lightfoot poured himself a large brandy. Upon my soul, Doctor, this is a dashed queer story. Time travel, eh? Unsuccessful time travel, Professor. Findeker's discovery of the double nexus particle sent human science of that era into a technological cul-de-sac.
Ah, said Lightfoot wisely.
To Leela, he whispered,
Are you following any of this?
Not a word.
Unaware that he had left his audience far behind him, the Doctor went on.
Clearly, this pig thing is still alive. It needs a human operator, of course, but the mental feedback is so intense the swinish instinct becomes dominant. It hates humanity and revels in carnage.
Leela decided she'd had all the explanation she could handle.
So what must we do now?
Find the homunculus and destroy it. More important, find its operator, and see he doesn't sacrifice more girls to stay alive.
How?
The Doctor went out into the hall, tore the laundry label from the basket, and carried it back into the room. Rundle Buildings, he read. Do you know the place, Professor?
I'm afraid I do. It's at the centre of the most notorious part of the East End, a place of vice and squalor, long overdue for clearance.
It might be cleared very quickly, said the Doctor grimly. Wang Chiang, as he calls himself, is like a monkey playing with matches in a gunpowder barrel. A scientific ignoramus who doesn't appreciate the dangers of Sigma energy. If he tampers with that time cabinet, he'll blow up most of London. This was a danger that Lightfoot could understand.
Then we must stop him, Doctor.
He rose to his feet, staggered, and sat down again hurriedly. The Doctor put a hand on his shoulder. You're still not fit, Professor. You must stay here and rest. Leela and I will go.
You can't take a young woman to that place. At this hour of the night, she'll witness the vilest scenes of depravity.
She's already encountered Wang Chiang himself, Professor, and nothing could be viler than that. Mr. Sin sat on his little throne, following the movements of his master with black, glittering eyes. Greel stood beside the time cabinet, running his fingers caressingly over its surface. He looked round him in satisfaction. He was in the secret headquarters, prepared for him by the Tong, a long, low room, ornately furnished in the style of a Chinese temple. At the far end, steps led up to a huge dragon idol on a raised dais, its huge saucer eyes glaring balefully over the room. Greel's scientific equipment had been reassembled on the waiting laboratory benches, and all around, the black-clad servants of the Tong prostrated themselves before their god, the great Wang Chiang.
"Liberation, Mr. Sin," said Greel exultantly. "Freedom! I can become whole again. Oh, how I have dreamt of this moment. I can be free of this dying body, refashion myself in some distant time and place.
Now that we have the Time Cabinet, we shall not stay long in this barbarous century.
He snapped his fingers. Li, who had now replaced Chang as Greel's chief servant, hurried forward and bowed.
The bag,
said Greel impatiently.
What bag, Lord? I brought it from the chamber beneath the cellar. I ordered you to bring it here with the other sacred things.
Li bowed his head.
Lord, there was much trouble when the body of the man Casey was found. Many people came to the cellar. I fled.
The bag was left behind.
Greel smashed him to the ground with one savage blow. You know the penalty for failing me. Up! And take the sting of the scorpion.
Greel produced a jeweled box in which lay a small black pill. He stared hypnotically at Li, who reached out, took the pill from the box, and swallowed it. His body went rigid. He gave a single, choked cry and fell dead at Greel's feet. Greel glared malevolently at the terrified group.
You have seen the penalty of failure, he hissed. Now return to the theater and bring me that bag.
Jago stood in the theater cellar, looking thoughtfully around him. The evening had ended in disaster as far as the performance was concerned. With the death of poor Casey and the disappearance of Chang, he'd been forced to cancel the performance and refund the audience's money. Before he could open again, he had to find a top-ranking act from somewhere to put on the top of the bill. Despite all these problems, Jago was in a cheerful mood. The more he thought about it, the more convinced he became that his latest bright idea was a real winner.
Shilling ahead, he muttered to himself. Guinea ahead, more like it. Tours round the lair of the Phantom. Personally conducted by yours truly, one of the heroes of the whole affair. The ladies will swoon in my arms. I'll get all this junk cleared out. Call in the electric light company.
Full of plans for a prosperous future, Jago began striding about the cellar and fell sprawling over some bulky object. Picking himself up, he saw that the obstacle was a bulky carpet bag. It was incredibly heavy, and it took all Jago's strength to lug it clear of the pile of junk. He opened it and found it full of strange-looking machinery. Resting on top was a saucer-shaped crystal pendant. Jago shook his head wonderingly and closed the bag again. He stood thinking for a moment. The trapdoor to Greel's chamber had been left standing open, and suddenly a dragging sound came from below. Jago looked nervously at the trapdoor, grabbed the heavy bag, and lugged it up the cellar steps. As he disappeared, the sound of hoarse, painful breathing came from down below. A grimy, yellow hand appeared over the edge of the trap, clawing feebly for a hold. Professor Lightfoot was doing his best to sort out the shambles the band of Tong assassins had made of his living room. He could well have left the job to the servants, but Lightfoot was a tidy soul and couldn't bear disorder. He took off his coat, rolled up his sleeves, and strapping on one of Mrs. Hudson's old aprons, he set about the job of tidying up. He was sweeping up the remains of a once valuable porcelain statuette when he heard a knocking on the door. He looked at the clock and hesitated for a moment. The police had taken away the body of their unfortunate colleague, accepting Lightfoot's assurances that there was no further need for a guard on the door. As the knocking came again, Lightfoot wondered if he had been wise to dispense with police protection. He went slowly into the hall, chose a heavy walking stick from the stand, and cautiously opened the door. Facing him was a bulky, red-faced figure in full evening dress, carrying, with some difficulty, an enormous carpet bag. Lightfoot stared at his unexpected visitor in astonishment.
"May I ask who you are, sir?"
Jago saw a tall, beaky-nosed old fellow in an apron, with a brush in one hand and a walking stick in the other, and naturally assumed that he was addressing Lightfoot's butler. He strode confidently past him and set the bag down in the hall.
"Thank you, my man. Tell your master that Mr. Jago wishes to see him urgently. Chop, chop, man, hurry up and announce me."
"Consider yourself announced," said the professor acidly. "I'm Lightfoot." Jago reeled, but recovered immediately.
"I should have realized. That brow, those hands, England's peerless professor of pathology." He swept off his top hat with a flourish. "Henry Gordon Jago, sir, at your service."
Lightfoot decided his visitor was either mad or drunk.
"Just tell me what all this is about, sir," he demanded.
"It is about the doctor," said Jago with impressive dignity. "The doctor and this bag. Shall we go inside?" Heaving up the bag, he marched into the sitting room, and Lightfoot had no alternative but to follow. Jago sat in the best armchair, looking hopefully at the decanter, accepted a large brandy, and told the professor of his association with the doctor. "When I found the bag in my cellar," he concluded, "I was sure the doctor would be interested. I inquired for him at the police station, and they told me he had been last seen in your company. So here I am. A great pleasure to be associated with you in this devilish affair." Lightfoot looked dubiously at the bag.
"I'm sure the doctor will be very interested. Unfortunately, he isn't here at present."
I know," said Jago. "The sleuth who never rests, eh?" Lightfoot smiled. He did once remark that sleep was for tortoises. He opened the bag and peered inside.
"You know, for the life of me, I can't discern what all this strange apparatus might be used for. I gather you think it belongs to this murderous lunatic the doctor is hunting. Well, it's nothing to do with my theatre, Professor, of that I'm sure."
Lightfoot tugged thoughtfully at his moustache.
"Presumably it was left behind by accident, which means that someone might well return for it."
Jago nodded shrewdly.
"A good point, Professor. We must mention that to the doctor."
"We can do better than that, Mr. Jago. We can take a hand ourselves. If we keep a discreet watch on your theatre, we might be able to spot these villains and trail them to their lair."
Jago got hurriedly to his feet. "That's a splendid scheme, Professor. Unfortunately, the nocturnal vapours are bad for my chest." Ruthlessly, Lightfoot overrode his evasions. "Don't worry about that, man. I'll lend you a nice heavy cape. Just write a little note for the doctor, and we can be on our way. You'll find pen and paper on the desk over there."
Jago saw there was no escape.
"Thank you, Professor," he said faintly, and began to write.
Lightfoot picked up his cudgel and waved it fiercely through the air. "We might just be lucky tonight, Mr. Jago. And if we are, I've quite a few lumps to repay."
The doctor gave a final heave on his burglar's jemmy, and the skylight cracked open.
"Come on, Leela,"
he whispered, and dropped down inside. Leela swung her legs through the skylight and dropped down after him. They had arrived at the laundry building to find it locked, barred, and apparently deserted. The doctor, in no mood to be delayed, had promptly climbed up onto the low roof and broken in. Now they were in a long corridor, piled high with laundry baskets. There was a door at the end, but it proved to be locked. The doctor peered through the keyhole and saw that the key was in the lock on the other side. He snatched some wrapping paper from one of the baskets and slid it under the door. Then he took a pencil from his pocket and poked it into the lock, pushing the key out on the other side. The key fell onto the paper. The doctor drew paper and key back through the gap under the door, picked up the key, opened the door, and ushered Leela through. They entered a long, dusty room, divided into cubicles by curtains of sacking. Inside each cubicle, a rough straw mattress lay on the floor. The doctor looked round.
"Sleeping quarters for the Tong," he whispered.
Leela sniffed.
"That smell, what is it?"
"Pipe of poppy, opium, a narcotic."
He looked round the deserted room.
Apparently the Tong have another warren, which means Weng Chiang will soon be up to his tricks again. He will sacrifice more girls. He'll need to build up his strength before using the time cabinet. He's got to kill again tonight. But where is he?
From somewhere nearby, a weak voice whispered, "At the House of the Dragon, Doctor."
Chapter 13. The House of the Dragon. The Doctor whirled round and ripped the sacking curtain from a nearby cubicle. Stretched out on a straw mattress lay Chang, placidly smoking a long, thin wooden pipe. He was a very different figure from the elegant magician who had dominated the stage of the Palace Theatre. His robes were ragged and filthy now, his face grimy and grey with weariness, and his left leg was a bundle of blood-soaked rags.
"Good evening, Mr. Chang," said the Doctor gently. "We thought you had already gone to join your ancestors."
"Not yet, Doctor, not quite. Though I shall certainly do so before very long."
Chang gestured feebly towards his leg. The Doctor moved to take off the wrappings, wondering if he could still help, but Chang waved him angrily away.
"No, Doctor, it is too late. Thanks to the opium, I feel no pain."
Leela shuddered, remembering her own encounter with the giant rat. It was easy to imagine what those terrible jaws had done to Chang's leg.
"How did you escape from it?"